and welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, naturopathic physician, herbalist, and host for this program. We're really excited to have Dr. Damon Jones on, who's an expert in diabetes reversal, hormones, metabolism, and weight loss. And Dr. Jones is a naturopathic physician licensed in Washington, D.C. She's a graduate of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine. She was one of my esteemed students, and I'm very proud of all her wonderful accomplishments, including contributor to Empower Her, an online magazine. She's been on Fox Health, and she's also the author of a fabulous recipe book, Recipes for Vibrant Living, called Delicious. Dr. Jones, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Dr. Z. How are you?
It's great to have you on the program.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to be a naturopathic doctor. It seems like you went from corporate America to holistic health. That's kind of an interesting jump.
Yeah. So when I graduated from undergraduate school, I came back to Washington, D.C., and I was working in one of the top five consulting firms in the country. And so, of course, it was a very demanding position, and I was working about 80 hours a week, and some of my clients were an hour and a half away. And so I was really not happy in that job position. And my mother suggested that I go see a naturopathic physician. And I was like, I'm not sick. I don't really know. I was unhappy, but I wasn't physically ill. And so I was like, I don't understand why she wants me to go see this lady. Mm-hmm. And I went to go see a naturopathic physician, and she started to talk to me about the mind-body connection and how if I was unhappy and I was stressed out and I was eating, you know, fast food and I was in my 20s, I might not actually see any disease processes. But if I continued to do that, I would actually become a very unhealthy adult in my 30s and 40s. And I just found that so fascinating and amazing that over time, I think 4 or 5 years, I decided I'd rather do what she's doing than what I'm doing. And so I decided that I was going to change my direction and that I was going to go back and become a naturopathic physician.
Uh-huh. And so you decided to, it still is a big leap because it's an intensive program. Tell us a little bit about what's needed to become a naturopathic physician and what you study and how intense it is.
Yeah, I think that you're right. It is a big leap, and I think one of the things I learned through working with her, and also she actually used a lot of homeopathy in the practice to work on the mental emotional level, is that I made a decision that I really loved and was really passionate about naturopathic medicine, whether it's foods or homeopathy or your mental emotional state. And if I have that level of passion and excitement and I was sharing it with everyone and taking courses outside of everything that I was doing in corporate America, that was really the place where I needed to be. That was my calling. And, you know, everybody has a passion for something. And so that's really what caused me to take that leap.
Right.
And gave me the confidence or the energy or the courage is probably the best word to actually make the changes. Since my undergraduate degree is in economics from Northwestern University, I had to take the pre-medical requirements because I did not have the science requirements the pre-medical requirements to go to naturopathic school. So I made the decision, and then I started taking classes at community colleges and at my local University of Maryland. I started taking classes to get all of those pre-medical requirements completed so that I could apply to naturopathic medical school, which requires you to have an undergraduate degree as well as all your pre-medical requirements, because you are going to a four-year graduate program in medical studies where you actually will be treating people at the end of that. So that took a couple of years. So I continued to work and then take those classes in the evening. So I will have to say, once I found the right place for me, and when I talk to my patients and when I do lectures and talk to other people, it's important for you to find your passion, what drives you, and you need to follow it to see where it takes you. And so it took me a couple of years to get all those classes out of the way, and then I, you know, quit my job, and I moved actually to Seattle, because I started my first year at the Bastyr University.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I studied my first year there, and then after my first year there, there were some family challenges, and I'm from Washington, D.C., and I felt it was too far away for me to help manage some of the issues that were going on in my family, and we made the decision that I would transfer to the University of Bridgeport because that was a lot closer, and it allowed me to have a better balance in my life with my family and my school. And that's another thing that you taught me a lot, that you have to teach patients to have balance in their life in order for them to have their health.
Yeah, I'm happy to have been instrumental in helping start that school and being involved with the whole idea of bringing a good accredited naturopathic school on the East Coast, sorely needed, where people that graduate are trained as naturopathic physicians. You know, they license different ways in different states, but certainly they have the medical knowledge of conventional doctors and many other skills. Like, there's no medical doctors that really become board certified in herbal medicine. Like,
Right. You
have to take boards as naturopathic doctors. Am I right?
You are correct. And it's very important because so often our patients think, well, something's natural, so I can take it. And they may not understand the interactions with the medications that they're currently taking. And so it's such a gift to be able to speak to them and help them understand that we want to help them and we want to support them, and that there are ways you can use herbal medicines, but how do you do it in a safe and effective way to improve the quality of your health? And what do you need to be aware of? And I think people are very grateful to us that we have that medical training, and then we can combine it with herbal medicine and nutrition, or, you know, physical medicine, and use those different tools together to help them heal.
How do you see yourself different from, say, like a Dr. Oz, who is like a conventionally trained surgeon who, you know, learned through, I guess, experience and whatnot about natural approaches to medicine? And, you know, there's a lot of doctors out there that, you know, take a class or two or a residency or whatnot in some aspect of what they call either integrated medicine or whatever. How do you see yourself as an ND standing out from that herd, so to speak?
I think that, you know, one of the gifts when I made the decision to become a naturopathic physician, I had the experience of understanding that as a human being, we are connected in total. Like, our mind, our body, our spirit is all connected. And in naturopathic medicine, like, so often, our philosophy and our theory of how we approach a patient is very different, because we're always looking at the whole patient. I will give you an example that I think is so funny that you'll appreciate. I had the experience, for your listeners, I had the experience to go to Jamaica with Dr. Z, and it was a small group of us, and we spent a week just living in nature, going on nature walks, you know, learning about different herbs and how they impact our bodies. And that was part of our experience in school. And the purpose of it was to really kind of teach us the connectedness of ourselves with the land and with the herbs and with the food and, you know, taking, you know, exercising by walking or swimming or, you know, being in community with other people. And our experience in school and our experience as naturopaths is that we look at the sum total of that, of how all of that contributes to health. And it's an integral part of the way that we think. So when medical doctors decide to take, you know, a couple of herbal classes here and there, or they take an integrative class, I always applaud them for learning how to try to apply that to what they already know. But the basic fundamentals of how we think about everything as a whole is really, I think, the fundamental difference of how naturopaths are able to connect with their patients and help them with their healing process by being able to talk about the medical procedures and talk about the biochemistry of the situation, but also really deeply understand the spiritual and the emotional components of how we can treat them. And that even includes understanding the spirituality of the herb that we're giving them, not just the biochemistry, but the spiritual nature of that when we're using it as part of the energetic treating process.
Interesting, yeah. Thank you for that. So
yeah.
Now, what types of things do you like to use in your particular practice in Washington, D.C. there? That's another thing that's very different from, I think, from many integrative doctors, is that usually NDs have many tools, but they use them all in a unique manner that's very different from other doctors who tend to, you know, stick with certain protocols, certain kind of, as you know, not to denounce it, but, you know, cookbook methodologies, you know, things like that. It's, you know, like, okay, flow charts, algorithms of treatment, whereas
different
NDs are very vastly different in the way they approach people.
Yeah. I think my approach is funny. I my mother is a biochemist. And so when I went through the process of learning but the biochemistry, the way that we began to talk to each other was very different. And so I consider myself, you know, kind of a science nerd geek. Like, I find all of that information really fascinating. And I think that it's too much to, you know, give to the patient because they may not understand it and it can be very confusing. So one of the gifts that I think that I've been given is to be able to speak to people in a way that they can actually understand how the medicine is helping them, but not feel overwhelmed by all the big words. And so what I try to do with all of my patients, and I've been told, given feedback, that they really appreciate this, is I try to help them to understand the basics of how the body works. Not only do I love biochemistry, I love anatomy and physiology, and I taught that for so many years that I try to teach them, this is how the body operates normally, and here's where your body is not working as well. And the purpose of how we're going to help you is we're going to help you get back to that normal process. How do we reverse diabetes? How do we bring down your hypertension? How do we get your cholesterol levels down? How do we normalize your hormones? So the first step when I talk to them is to engage them and help them understand that they can empower themselves and that they can be in charge of their healing process. And so I start with that, and I think that that really helps them to understand, particularly if they're working with other practitioners as well or other medical doctors, to understand how we can work together. Then I'm a big foodie, and you know, Dr. Z, I'm a big foodie. I love food. So I
remember you eating many you look forward to our midnight meals in Jamaica.
I did. And I think food is great, and I think that that's a thing that lots of people like. People like food. And so one of the special ways that I work with them is I try to give them food. Instead of taking food away, a lot of people say when you change your diet, you're taking all this away, what am I going to do? I try to give them food. I try to teach them about different types of food and preparing it in ways that they really are going to enjoy it, using lots of medicinal herbs, you know, because cooking herbs can be medicinal herbs. And so when we look at rosemary and we look at garlic and we look at, you know, ginger and we look at turmeric, those things are fantastic from a flavoring perspective. One of my favorite is cumin. I use that in everything. And I teach them how you can use that to make your food taste good. So they start to think about, oh my goodness, look at what I'm gaining, instead of look at what she's taking away from me. And so they can actually use food as a medicine for them. So that's another huge part of my practice, and that's how my book came about, because people kept saying healthy eating is not going to taste good, and I was like, it can, I promise. Let's try these different foods to see how they would work. And I started doing cooking demonstrations, and people were like, oh my god, this is really good. I don't like kale, but I'll eat this kale, this is good. And I'm like, you do like kale, you just didn't know how to prepare it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it really is true. That you hit on a very interesting point, that people think that healthy food is tasteless and you know, things like that. But you, in the beginning of your book, you talk about the factors as to why the American diet has gone just totally. Is totally out of control, and how you can bring people back and get them away from what you call destructive eating, which I think is kind of interesting because, I mean, if you look at Americans, they don't look malnourished. They don't look malnourished, and you could spot Americans, you know, anywhere around the world. They're generally, and I can't say that everyone's like this, of course, but many times they're overweight, and then you're basically saying that they're just not overweight. They're lacking really good nutrients. They're lacking antioxidants. They're inflamed. Their blood sugar's out of control, and all these interesting things that go along with the problem with you know. Because food is huge. Look, we're about to celebrate Thanksgiving. It's a very food-oriented holiday.
Yeah.
So food is not only medicine, like Hippocrates said, and things like that, but it's also cultural, and it's a huge part of our humanity. So it's interesting that you decided to start with food, which I think is great, because that is the foundation of natural medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like I said, I always encourage people to really follow their passions and to follow their dreams. And I was fortunate enough to have the passion for food and to find that really early. My father's side of the family is from the South, and we come from farmers, and we used to always have gardens. And even when my grandparents moved to Washington, D.C., they used to have garden in the backyard, like literally in the alley. They had a really small backyard, but they still had things that were growing there. So I grew up with fresh fruits and vegetables and knowing what that was like. And then when I went to go visit my family in the South, then, you know, we have all kinds of trees and fruit trees and foods that are growing all over the property. And so we were always given fresh food. And those foods are colorful and they're beautiful and they're full of nutrients, and they taste so different when they're fresh than when they're processed. And in the United States, unfortunately, a lot of our culture is convenience. And when we start looking at convenient foods and we start looking at processed foods, the more you process foods, the less nutrients they have available to you. And when you're taking in things that don't have nutrients, your cells of your body aren't getting what they need, and they start to get sick. And so you start to have that inflammation and blood sugars going, you know, all out of control, and having, you know, heart problems and feeling overweight and bloated and uncomfortable and digestive issues. A lot of those things come from us forgetting to include and incorporate foods that are nutrient dense. And when we look at traditional cultures, we look at the way that the Mediterranean diet, which has so many research studies behind it, and you look at Italian food, and you look at Greek food, and you look at traditional cultures like in South America or in Africa, you see that people eat lots of fruits and vegetables, and you see that they eat really healthy types of proteins, whether they're animal proteins or vegetarian proteins, and you look at the statistics on how people's health is impacted by those nutrient-dense foods, and you see people are healthier. And so we've just moved away from our traditional culture that we used to eat for the last 150,000 years. We ate very nutrient-dense food. And maybe for the last 100 years or less, we're starting to eat really processed foods. And if you look at all the epidemiological studies, you'll see that when we were eating nutrient-dense food, we were healthier as populations and as generations. And as we're eating more processed foods, we are becoming sicker and sicker and sicker as a world population, not just American population, but as a world population, we're becoming sicker because of the processed foods. And you can see the correlations very, very clearly. I want us to get back to what we've been doing for hundreds of thousands of years, which is eating nutrient-dense food and enjoying it as part of our culture, as part of our holiday season, sharing it with our children so that they have palates that want nutrient-dense food as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. When I wrote my book on herbal medicine, Natural Medicine Chest, we had a discussion with our publishers, with myself and Dr. Kamai, and they said, put a nice little icon at the bottom of the herbs and tell people whether the herb is wildcrafted, can you buy it at an ethnic store, is it organic or not, and et cetera, is it medicinal or is it culinary? And that was really nice. People liked that about the book. They could open up a chapter on ginseng and find out about, the folklore, scientific validation, how to use it, et cetera, et cetera. But they really, really liked the icons. And when I opened your book, I was like, wow, there's cool icons at the bottom of this book. There's hearts and vegetable icons and little arrow things. So what are the icons about in your book?
So first, I just want to say that one of the great things about having you as one of our teachers is that you are so supportive and open about things that worked in your practice and things that didn't work in your practice, and having goals of how you can reach people and really get them involved in healing themselves. And so the fact that you gave us that kind of inspiration, that when it was time for me to work on my book, I was doing the same kind of thing, like how can I really help people understand how to use the different what I call food lifestyles, right? Because diet has a negative connotation. Really, it just means the food that you're putting in your mouth. But in our society, we've made it mean a lot of other things and a lot of negative things. So I wanted to look at this idea of food lifestyles because I don't want people to just eat a particular way for a week or two or maybe a month. I want them to really think about how they can shift into a healthier lifestyle that they can enjoy. And so I came up with this idea of what are the food lifestyles that I use the most in my practice, and that not only would I give people simple recipes that they could do in, you know, 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 30 minutes, but also I wanted them to know which of these are going to be good for them. So, for example, I picked broccoli as a food lifestyle for blood sugar balancing. So people who have problems with blood sugars, if they're pre-diabetic or diabetic, because one of the things that helps to balance blood sugars is fiber. So I wanted them to think about fruits and vegetables. I wanted them to think about grains. I wanted them to think about fiber. So I use that. So that's an example. And any of the recipes in the book that have the little broccoli are going to be ones that they can use to help them balance their blood sugars. And that's why, you know, I picked that. So the heart health is, or the anti-inflammatory diet, because, again, there have been lots of studies that show inflammation in the body. You might not be feeling pain, but if you're inflamed on the inside and that continues over years' time, you're more likely to have different types of heart issues and heart problems. So I use the heart for anti-inflammatory. So what foods are going to reduce inflammation in the body? And so that is how that, you know, came into being. And then there are other lifestyles that we use as well. Dr. Z, you are one of the people that taught me so much about how dairy can be such a difficult problem for patients, and that they're not even aware that it's giving them congestion and headaches and, you know, aches and pains. And so dairy-free is another option where you have the little milk cartons and you have an X over top of them, because people don't even recognize that when they take dairy out, because it's found in so many different things, that when you take dairy out, then all of a sudden you have different types of health that you never had before. Oh, I can breathe out of my nose.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I could.
I don't have
to
live on Sudafed or,
exactly,
or other things like that, because you're treating. Yeah. You know what? We have to take a quick station break.
Sure.
And when we get back, I want to talk about some of these fabulous recipes, and then I want to talk about how these recipes help people with diabetes, because that seems to be a huge thing, and then a little bit more about your practice. So let's do a station ID, and we'll be back with more of the natural nurse, Dr. Z, Dr. Damon Jones, talking about her book, Daylicious, Recipes for Vibrant Living. Stay with us. And we're back with the natural nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician, herbalist, and professor. And I'm here with Dr. Damon Jones. And she is just a dynamo when it comes to an emerging voice in nutrition and nutrition education. She's a naturopathic physician in private practice in the Washington, D.C. area. And we're talking about her book, Daylicious. And that's how you spell your name, right? Damon, D-A-E-M-O-N, right?
Yep.
Oh, I love that. That was really a beautiful play on words there.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I wanted to, all right, I'm going to be devil's advocate here. I'm going to be like a hard patient, right?
Okay.
I'm going to say, Dr. Jones, I don't have time to cook. I get home really late. I work three jobs to support myself. I get home at 8 o'clock. I don't feel like cooking a big meal. How can you help me?
So I actually have patients like that, and actually sometimes my schedule looks like that. So I really understand that. So one of the things that I started doing when I was actually in naturopathic school is I would set aside a couple of hours on a weekend, and I would cook multiple things during that time, and then I'd put them in the freezer so that I can pull them down and I can utilize them at another point in time. So one of the things that I talk to patients about is when they say that they don't have time, I'm like, well, do you have time to be sick? Do you have time to go to the doctor? Do you have time to do all these things? That's what you're doing right now, because you're not planning for success. And the way that you plan for success is you take time to think about what you're going to eat and how you're going to eat it and when you're going to be able to do that before you get to the place where you're starving and you don't have any other choices.
That's a good point. Just to, let me interject. That's when people come home, their blood sugar is down, they're starved, they want to open the fridge and pop something in their mouth. And so that's a bad habit. And certainly that's what you're trying to stop, because sometimes health is all about habits, decisions, the way you live life, priorities. So you mentioned like four or five powerful concepts there, allowing people to think about beforehand, before they get into that kind of hungry, zombie-like stage. Mm-hmm. They're like zombies. They just want to gnaw on anything, right?
Right.
You can't get to that stage. That's the key. If you notice that in your body, folks, if you notice that you're doing those behaviors, you can't. You have to prepare, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, I talk to people, you know, one of the gifts that we get to do when we get to talk to people is we get to talk to them about very important and very intimate issues in their lives. And so one of the things that I talk to people about is, how do you create success in your life? And it's a thought process. And when they think about issues where they've created success, they always will know that there was some planning that they actually did in order to achieve that success. And once they can understand that they've done that in an area of their lives, they can understand they can do it for their health and they can do it for their cooking process as well. Again, I go back to looking at traditional cultures. Traditional cultures, before there was refrigeration, which has only been around for about 100 years, people spent about 80% of their day figuring out what they were going to do for food.
Mm.
And now we don't even spend 8 minutes a day trying to figure out what they're going to do for food. So we have to look at what worked, and we need to actually start integrating that back into their lives. So I always talk to people about planning, because quite honestly, Dr. Z, if I haven't eaten all day, then a Snickers bar is going to look really good to me too.
Yeah, you go to the gas station, you go pay your gas, and they have all these enticing, you know, high sugar snacks there, and your blood sugar's down in the toilet. Hey, I've been tempted too. I usually get a bag of almonds if I'm out there, so I have the foresight to have almonds in my car and,
yep,
and snacks in every place that I go. There's something healthy to eat. I put them in my pathway. So
yes, exactly.
In my pot, like even yesterday in clinic, I was working in our new clinic at the Bridgeport, and I was hungry. I reached into my pocket. There is a wonderful snack that I had made, you know, kind of homemade granola kind of bar. So mm-hmm. You have to think ahead. Now, another thing is, what about breakfast? That's a huge problem, because the typical American breakfast is grab a donut and coffee and hit the road, or hit you know, one of these big coffee chains or mm-hmm. whatnot and get going. Now that's a disaster for health, because of, I guess, the high sugar, the high
yep.
glycemic load, the caffeine,
yep.
revving your adrenals. What's a good breakfast for people?
Yeah, so one, you know, there are a couple things that I recommend for people for breakfast, and so it brings up a couple of other really important points. The first one is, I personally am a smoothie fanatic. I love smoothies. I think that they're the greatest thing in the world, because they don't take very long to make. You can have them for breakfast, and you can have them for snacks when you get home from work or school. And you can customize them, so they can actually have whatever it is that you want. And one of my favorite sayings is, how can you add one more fruit or vegetable to your day? So with smoothies, you can do those in the morning, and if you don't have a lot of time, you just whiz them up in your blender, or I have a Vitamix, and you put them in a container, and you can take them with you. So it kind of starts to get rid of the excuses that people have about, well, I don't have time, because that's actually less time than stopping at, you know, a chain and getting coffee and whatever to actually make a smoothie in your home. So whether that is you put in fruits and vegetables, like berries are great, a way to start the day. You can put in a protein powder if you want. I tend to put in almond butter or peanut butter or something like that to kind of give me a little bit more sustenance until I can get to the next time I'm going to eat. And so I really recommend kind of thinking about something that's very quick. The second thing that I recommend for people is, again, plan ahead. So the day before, think about what you want for breakfast, whether it's boiled eggs or some form of protein, I always recommend, or you want to have some fruit, and put that somewhere where you can have access to it, and then when you get up in the morning, it's already prepared, and then you can just, you know, warm it up and you can eat it. Or the third thing that I recommend for patients for breakfast, not just for breakfast, but sometimes for lunch too, is look at places that are close to your work. So if you're going to go in and grab something and see what they have on their menus that is going to be more substantial and going to be more healthy for you, particularly if you're working with blood sugar issues, you absolutely need to make sure you're eating protein with every meal, whether it's animal protein or it's some type of vegetable protein. So sometimes I just have people bring in their menus for
that's a good idea.
Places for breakfast and places for lunch, and we literally go through those places where they normally eat, and we make suggestions, and then we ask if they can make substitutes. One of the things about the substitute process is if you tend to go somewhere a couple times, three times a week, something like that, if you are a loyal customer and you ask them to make changes in substitutes and they know that you're going to be coming in and you're going to be doing business with them, they're more likely to make those substitutes for you and have things ready for you that are going to be more healthy for you. So that's another, you know, way of increasing your health and increasing the business that you go to at the same time. So it's a win for everybody.
You have a lot of soups in your book, and
I
think that's a nice way. I think there was maybe it was a case study that this person that ate soup every time before they ate dinner, they ended up losing like 100 pounds over 2 years or something like that. I mean, it's amazing. So soup, you know, now that it's a little colder, I think soup is a good thing, you know, even from a Chinese medicine perspective, to kind of use warming foods for the cool season.
Yeah, and one of the things about, you know, when you think about having, I love soup, and all of my recipes that have soups have vegetables in them, and they may have some beans in them, or they may have vegetables, and they may have some, you know, other small pieces of meat in them, depending on if you're a vegetarian or if you're not a vegetarian. But again, how do you add one more vegetable to what you're eating? Because I think the goal of 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, with most of the servings being vegetables, is huge. And it's something that people get really overwhelmed with. But if you just think about, if I have soup and I have butternut squash soup, or if I have, you know, tomato soup, which I used to love when I was little, or, you know, you have a pumpkin curry soup. Some of those are in my book, and some of them are on my website at healthydays.org.
So what is that again? So healthy and then
D-A-E-S, healthydays.org, because patients call me Dr. Day. So the idea of having soups is most of the soups, all the soups that I do, they always have vegetables in them as well as some type of protein. So when you have soups that have vegetables in them, you're getting the vegetables, you're getting the nutrients, you're getting them in a way that's easy for your body to process the vegetables, and it's easy to process the nutrients. And so for people who have digestive issues or have other problems, those are ways to kind of help support the process to make sure.
And you could throw stuff in a crock pot and turn it on, and by the time you get home, you have a healthy meal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, this evening I'm going to a potluck, and I'm going to bring my black bean chili, which people love. Mm. It's vegetarian, and I'm, you know, taking it in a crock pot. It's great because then it's warm for people to eat, and you don't have to try to figure out how to warm it up on the stove. You can actually enjoy all the other people that are there at the same time. So I really do try to make living a great experience and healthy living a fantastic experience where you're always able to enjoy your friends, enjoy your family, enjoy your health, enjoy the food. I think that that's really what people want. And I try to live that way, and I try to give suggestions to people to help them live that way as well.
Now, we have a lot of patients that are diabetic.
And, yes.
I know that's something that you really approach very differently than conventional medicine. And there's even a condition, you know, the Syndrome X, the metabolic syndrome,
yes,
which is the pre-diabetic stage. So what words of advice can you give for folks that are battling that, which is many, many Americans?
The first thing that, you know, that I say, I have written several articles on reversing diabetes, with the idea being that it's reversible in many cases, particularly if people are struggling with type 2 diabetes where they're on some oral medications and they haven't gotten to the place where they're taking insulin. It really is a reversible process, and I mean that in that lifestyle issues. There was a study that was done that was, I thought, fantastic, talking about lifestyle issues. So really having a commitment to understanding how to change your life can impact your diabetes in such a strong way. And in this study, they had three groups of people. They had a group that was on placebo that they were taking something, but it really was nothing but a sugar pill. They had a group of people that were taking oral medications. Metformin is the generic name that a lot of people are taking, glucophage. And then they had a group of people that they did lifestyle interventions, which means they talked to them about exercise. They talked to them about the foods that they ate. And in this study, what happened was people that were doing the lifestyle issues were able to prevent diabetes for 11 years. So they were all in the pre-diabetic state, all of the people, and they were able to prevent diabetes for 11 years. The people that were in comparison to the placebo, and the people that actually took metformin, even though they weren't diabetics yet, they actually became diabetic in 3 years. So that's almost a fourfold difference in lifestyle issues of giving you an extra decade of not being diabetic. And diabetic complications are really what makes people's lives so difficult. So it's not really the disease itself. It's when you get to the complications of blindness and kidney disease and poor wound healing and, you know, amputations that changes the quality of your life forever.
Yeah.
So I focus on lifestyle issues and helping people to understand changing what you eat, not skipping meals, understanding how different foods actually raise your blood sugar levels. And we literally do this as part of our time together, understanding those things. You can make better decisions once you understand that.
Yeah. And I know for many folks that are diabetic, they're not exercising enough too, which I know that's kind of another foundation of natural medicine is to get people to fall in love with something. So since you've been a student, I got my black belt in Tang Soo Do.
Congratulations.
With my son. Thank you. Yeah, so I, and that was my saving grace, because even though you get banged up in martial arts, you know, I would religiously go 3 times a week, and, you know, as a, you know, kind of hunter-gatherer, blood type O kind of person, I need that kind of, whereas other people thrive on yoga and things like that, I need serious cardio stuff. And I joined gyms and, you know, kind of went sometimes and didn't really have a buddy system, I guess, in place. So you need support systems, I think, is what it boils down to, you know. And I know your book is a great place to start to kind of help people. But if one person in the family is on board, but the rest of them are like, oh, I don't know about this stuff, that can kind of sabotage people. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's funny because last week I did a blog talk radio program, and I had one of my patients on, and she said what she thought was the best part of the treatment was that I came to her house. I met with her children and her husband, and all of us sat down at the table, and we came up with a treatment plan about how they were going to eat and what they were going to do. And everybody made a commitment that they were going to help everybody else. And so we made a decision that in the household, everybody was going to eat in a particular way. And then if one of the children has dairy issues and she can't have dairy, but the other child was like, okay, so when I'm not with my sister, I can have ice cream. And it's like, yeah, when you're not with her, but don't have it in front of her because that's not supportive. So I do work with families, not just individuals, to kind of help them understand and have them build in a commitment. So again, what they're doing together becomes the normal thing. And that the other things that they do outside of that can be the treat, so that no one feels like there's something wrong with them because they're sick and they're doing something that's preventing everybody else from being able to be successful. I am a very big support-oriented, community-oriented person. So on my website, I actually have lots of recipes. I have different types of radio programs as well to kind of talk to people about what to do. I have group classes to support people in understanding how they can support each other in the process. In January, I'm going to do a 30-day transformation where, yes, we'll be doing some changes in dietary habits and some detoxification, but we'll also be doing centering exercises every day. So anyone who wants to join that program, you have the support of the community. I'll send emails out every day.
I was going to say, can people join you through social media and online if they can't get to, physically see you in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. I am. Since my patients call me Dr. Day, D-R-D-A-E, if you're on Twitter, you can go to @DrDay, and you can leave me questions on Facebook. You can join me as Healthy Days, like facebook.com/healthydays, and that's D-A-E-S. Healthy Days. You can join the conversation that way. I have lots of YouTube videos that are, 2 or 3 minutes about different health issues, health topics, meditations. Right. So again, you could go to YouTube/Healthy Days and join my YouTube channel. I do Skype visits and phone visits for people that are outside the DC area who need more individual one-on-one support. So I really want to create community and create I have blogs that talk about different health issues on my website. So I try to create an infrastructure of education and support for people so that they can learn more about how to live a healthier life and how to do it in a fun way.
Wow. Very nice. Healthy Days, DAES.org.
That's right.
Great information. Well, let's leave everyone. We only have about a minute or two. Let's leave everyone with a couple good recipes for their Thanksgiving feast, for instance. What would be a nice dish to bring to your auntie or Uncle, John or whoever?
I think, one of the easiest things that you can do, I love cranberry sauce, and you can just take cranberries and add a little bit of water. You need to add some sugar to it because they're so tart, and you can also add, orange juice, and you can just, bubble that up in 5 or 10 minutes, and you have cranberry sauce. And I also, you can put persimmons in it, you can put oranges in it. Again, you can put more fiber in it, and it's real. It's not whatever it is that they make in the
I like fresh cranberries.
Yeah, it's lovely. So
anything for a diabetic? Could you use xylitol or some sweetener like that to not spike up the blood sugar?
Absolutely, you can do that. You can use agave is one of the ones that is easy to find in the regular grocery store, and that's one of the things that you can do. I recommend, one of my favorite things is getting a favorite vegetables that's actually great for anti-cancer as well as for blood sugar levels is Brussels sprouts. And I have a great recipe in my book for Brussels sprouts where you just cut them into slices. You put a little bit of olive oil in the bottom of the pan. You put some dill, some salt and pepper, and then you squeeze a little bit of lime over top. It takes about 10 minutes, and people are really starting to understand that Brussels sprouts are really healthy and that they taste really great.
Yeah. Well, have a wonderful holiday, and thanks so much for being our guest.
Thank you, Dr. Z.
And we'll have you on again because we always need good information about good food and good healthy living. So, Dr. Damon Jones or Dr. Day, right here on Progressive Radio Network, the Dr. Z and Natural Nurse Program, and we're going to sign out for this edition, and we want you to stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.